everyone! Welcome back to Mallory's Weird World Adventures. In the last episode, we discussed epic legendary figures from ancient and medieval times and how their legends evolved into these larger-than-life figures. For instance, the real Merlin was actually a bard, yet hundreds of years after his death, he came back into folklore as this epic wizard. Since I love weird history, and I know many of you do as well, I thought I'd bring up a couple of modern legendary figures who lived within the last 100 years and have still somehow transcended time and emerged these fantastic figures thanks to the word of mouth and later modern media. I'm talking about the infamous duo of Bonnie and Clyde. What's different about Bonnie and Clyde is that, one, it was modern enough and close enough to today's timeline that we do have a lot more real facts on the pair, and two, because they lived in more modern times, their tales were well recorded both in police reports and newsletters, also in books as well. Speaking of, I want to introduce you to one of my absolute favorite books. I read My Life with Bonnie and Clyde by Blanche Caldwell Barra a few years ago. Blanche was Clyde's brother Buck's wife, and she accompanied the Barra gang throughout their adventures for several years and recorded her experiences, and it really blew my mind. So let's discuss a bit about the real Bonnie and Clyde and some ideas you maybe didn't know about them. Bonnie and Clyde, a dynamic duo shrouded in mystery and crime. As more and more time passes by after their deaths, the more they get set into legend, and the harder it is to separate out the truth from the legends of this infamous couple. Why were they so beloved? Well, they rose to infamy as, questionably, the most famous outlaws of all time as America was facing the impacts of the Great Depression. People were starving and struggling to get by, and Bonnie Elizabeth Parker and Clyde Chestnut Barrow did whatever they could to ensure they didn't go hungry. They took matters into their own hands when most of the country was afraid to do the same thing, though, to be fair, because of this, crime was at an all-time high during these times, making them heroes to many. While they were seen as a sort of Robin Hood-like figure, however, it is important to point out that they generally didn't rob big banks, rather mom-and-pop stores, restaurants, gas stations, and smaller banks, anywhere they could easily get away with. Sometimes they would only leave having stolen $5 or $10, which would be equivalent to somewhere between $88 and $177 today with inflation. Regardless, people idolized them, and they were well protected by family, friends, and occasionally even strangers, as they ran from the law in their over 21-month crime spree. They were supposed to have killed about 13 people along their spree, and most of their victims were police officers and other officials. Bonnie and Clyde were a young, attractive couple in love who were challenging the way society worked, and they were fighting to keep from going hungry. They stole to feed themselves and their families, and they were making front-page news almost every day, making them celebrities, especially for that time, in their own way. The two of them weren't married together, so that only added to the scandal of their tabloids. Undeveloped photos of the two left behind at a hideout were confiscated by police and later published as well, which provided everyone an image of what this couple looked like, and it showed them having fun, helping people to both relate to and idolize them even more. Their crimes hit a turning point when they shot and killed Highway Patrolman H.D. Murphy and Edward Wheeler near Grapevine, Texas on Easter Sunday of 1934. It was then that the head of Highway Patrol, L.G. Fares, offered a $1,000 reward for their dead bodies. Note, it was a reward for their bodies, not for their capture. They were wanted dead, not alive. Officials likely knew how big these outlaws were getting, and it was clear that they were showing the public that you could stand up to the man and get away with it. So naturally, that was bad for society. They became a symbol of hope for outlaws everywhere. They were celebrities. And that kind of power was very dangerous in the hand of criminals. So officials knew that they wanted them dead. On May 23, 1934, Bonnie and Clyde were shot to death by law enforcement officials, led by Texas Ranger Captain Frank Hamer and Texas Officer Mamie Gault, when they fired 167 bullets at the couple. Officials recruited Barra gang member Henry Methvin's father, Ivy, to help trap the couple, likely so Methvin could get a lighter sentence or to at least secure his safety. Ivy parked his truck on the side of a major road and pretended to be changing his tire, as he had heard word that Bonnie and Clyde would be headed that way. The couple did come, and they stopped to help him with his tire. Supposedly, the officers planned to take Bonnie and Clyde alive. However, a logging truck came by, which supposedly forced one of the deputies to open fire against the original plan. Despite everything, after firing 167 bullets, it's pretty questionable whether or not the officers really had any intent to ever bring the couple back alive. With as famous as they had gotten and how much people idolized them, it's pretty likely that law enforcement was so afraid of the legendary duo that they wanted to ensure that they were dead. Why else would they have fired 167 bullets into them within 20 seconds? We may never know if they really intended to bring them in alive, but we do know that Bonnie and Clyde both died that day, with 17 entrance wounds on Clyde and 26 in Bonnie. Bonnie was 23 years old when she died, and Clyde was 25. Despite wishing to be buried together, they were separated in death. Bonnie's gravesite can be found in Crown Hill Memorial Park in Dallas, Texas, while Clyde can be found in Dallas at the Western Heights Cemetery. The car that Bonnie and Clyde were shot to death in was a 1934 Ford Model 40B Forder Deluxe sedan in a tan color. That's really fun to say, by the way. The reason that it was so important is that this car was faster than most police cars at that time, making it the perfect getaway car when running from law enforcement. It was one of the first Ford vehicles equipped with a V8 engine, which was the epitome of speed in 1934. After supposedly taking 112 bullets, the Bonnie and Clyde death car was confiscated by a Louisiana sheriff before a federal judge ruled that the car must be returned to its former owner, Ruth Warren of Topeka, Kansas, who Bonnie and Clyde had stolen the car from. I'd be pretty pissed, actually, if somebody stole my car and the police wanted to keep it for evidence because they were, you know, super famous criminals. But luckily, he took them to court and he got his car back. Warren eventually sold this car to Charles Stanley, who toured it in fairgrounds, lecture halls, and offered it as a sideshow attraction. Believe it or not, up until the 1970s, tourists were allowed to sit inside the vehicle. It had been reupholstered, by the way, to remove the bloody interior, so that's nice. And they could take photos in it. While it still tours the country from time to time, occasionally making it hard to find, the current permanent residence of this car is in Prim, Nevada. Up until 2021, it called Whiskey Pete's Resort and Casino home before moving across the street to Prim Valley Resort and Casino, where you can still visit it now in 2022 and 2023. There are many cars around the country that claim to be the death car of Bonnie and Clyde, but the car at Prim Valley Resort and Casino is the one that can be traced back to the death of the infamous couple. And you can compare the bullet holes in the car to the bullet holes in the crime scene photos from that deadly day, so there's really no denying it. Honestly, I saw the car and it just looks so surreal. I think they've coated it in something so it doesn't rust or decay. So it was almost unbelievable at first, but when you compare the car, that specific car, to the crime scene photos, the bullet holes do match up. So in my opinion, and of course it's also verified by officials, that is the real car. It would be really hard to recreate those bullet holes in the exact locations, and like I said, they do match up perfectly. So be wary of other places claiming they have the real car. People also confuse cars used in the 1967 film with the real car. So if you'd like to see the death car of Bonnie and Clyde, be sure to get off the Prim exit, which is exit 1 on Interstate 15, right at the border of California and Nevada. If you're coming from California, you want to exit right. If you're coming from Nevada, you want to exit left, over to the Prim Valley Resort and Casino. If you enter in at the main casino entrance, the one that's facing the highway, at that major gas station, you enter from that door, and then go to the right, keep walking until you leave the casino floor and enter a hard-floored hallway, and that's where you'll find the car. If you turn at the entrance and keep going right, you really cannot miss it. Also touring with the car is the shirt that Clyde Barrow wore when he was shot to death, signed by his own sister for authenticity. This torn shirt, if you look close enough, still has very faded but distinct blood stains on it. The first time I saw that shirt, I was with my husband, and he's like, oh, look, there's some kind of like rusty, dirty spots on this shirt. And as we looked closer, we realized it was very, very faded blood. I mean, it makes sense that he was shot 90 years ago and the blood is so faded, but you can still kind of see this weird, you know, copper outline of where the blood was on the shirt. I know that this is very strange, but I love visiting that car every time I go through Vegas. Something about standing next to this iconic vehicle that saw one of history's most most shocking moments. It's very surreal. Since we're talking about Bonnie and Clyde, something I thought might be fun here too while talking about the pair is to discuss a few little known facts about them, some of which might actually surprise you. So here we go. Did you guys know that Bonnie was married, but Clyde was not? Bonnie Elizabeth Parker got married at the age of 15 years old, just 6 days before turning 16, to Roy Thornton. The couple met in school, fell in love, dropped out of school, and got married on September 25th, 1926. The couple's relationship was very short-lived, as Roy was constantly having brushes with the law himself and quickly started having issues up until Roy was imprisoned for robbery in early 1929. Since he was in prison, the couple never officially got divorced, but they also never saw each other after January of 1929. Thornton continued to have issues with the law up until his death. He was killed on October 3, 1937, after trying to escape the Huntsville State Prison. 3 years prior to his death, supposedly when he heard about Bonnie's death, he commented, "Well, I'm glad they jumped out like they did. It's much better than being caught." Despite not seeing Bonnie for over 5 years prior to her death, she died wearing his wedding ring around her finger. Did you know that Bonnie and Clyde met in 1930, 2 years prior to their criminal spree together? While Roy was in prison for murder, according to the most credible account of their meeting, there have been several versions that have been shared around, by the way, Bonnie and Clyde met at a friend's house in Dallas, Texas in 1930 when Bonnie was 19 years old. Supposedly, Clyde met Bonnie when she was in the kitchen making hot chocolate for her friend, and it was love at first sight. However, Clyde was in prison shortly after they met, so Bonnie paid him regular visits in prison and even smuggled a gun into prison to help him escape at one point. While he did get out, he was caught again quickly after his escape. And it was when he was released on his parole in 1932 that he met back up with Bonnie and the two began their life of crime together. Did you know that Clyde's early arrests are shocking and also kind of silly even? Clyde Barrow was first arrested for failing to return a rental car on time. His second arrest came when he and his brother Buck, a later member of the Barrow gang, stole turkeys. He was repeatedly sexually assaulted while in prison, which led him to kill his tormentor by crushing his skull in with a pipe, though an inmate already serving life in sentence took the blame for the death to keep Clyde from harsher punishment. This leaves many historians questioning how the correctional system had damaged Clyde Barrow, leading to the events that inevitably made him infamous. That, mixed with his rejection from the Navy. Apparently, Clyde was set on joining the Navy. He even got a tattoo, USN, on his left arm as a teenager prior to applying. However, the Navy rejected his application due to lingering effects from a serious boyhood illness. In January 1932, right before his release from prison, when he met back up with Bonnie Parker to begin their life of crime together, Clyde saw no end in sight as he served a 14-year sentence for robbery at the Easton Prison Farm. Supposedly, work conditions were so brutal that Clyde took an axe to his foot, severing his big toe and part of his second toe in an attempt to be moved to a less terrible facility to serve out his sentence. Unfortunately, his self-mutilation was for nothing, as he was released on parole 6 days later and was permanently crippled from this. He ultimately was unable to wear a shoe while driving because of this incident. Did you know that Bonnie herself walked with a limp after an accident? On June 10, 1933, slightly less than a year prior to the couple's death, Clyde crashed a car after missing a detour sign. The Ford V8 smashed through a barricade, was sent airborne, and eventually crashed into a dry riverbed. The battery was torn open, which caused acid to splash into the car. This burned Bonnie's right leg down to the bone at places. The third-degree burns she received from this incident gave her a permanent limp, requiring Clyde to carry her at times when they needed to move or get away quickly. Did you know that Bonnie wrote poetry and eerily seemed to predict their death just 2 weeks prior to it? According to many, Bonnie Parker was an excellent creative writer in school. Parker herself was imprisoned in 1932 prior to leaving on her life of crime with Clyde for attempting theft at a hardware store. In prison, she wrote a collection of poetry entitled Poetry from Life's Other Side. The eerie part of the tale comes in, however, when she sent her mother a disturbing and foreshadowing ode just 2 weeks before her and Clyde were shot to death. If you enjoyed the 1967 film, you might actually remember the end of the poem, which they did include in the movie. When I first watched the film, I had no idea those were actually Bonnie Parker's words, but they were. she sent the poem to her mother, which she called The Trail's End, that ended with the following stanzas. They don't think they're too smart or desperate. They know that the law always wins. They've been shot at before, but they do not ignore that death is the wages of sin. Someday they'll go down together. They'll bury them side by side. To few it'll be grief, to the law a relief, but it's death for Bonnie and Clyde. To Bonnie and Clyde's dismay, they were killed 2 weeks later. And unfortunately, as I have mentioned before, against their wishes, they were not buried together. Aside from the fact that tourists used to sit in the car they died in for decades, it's also eerie to know that the souvenir hunters actually tried to cut off parts of their bodies at the scene of their death. After hearing the commotion, people gathered to the scene and attempted to try to take pieces of Bonnie's hair and blood-soaked dress. And apparently a couple of people succeeded in leaving with locks of her hair. One man even attempted to cut off and take Clyde's trigger finger and another his ear before the law enforcement intervened. While Bonnie and Clyde are shrouded in myth and mystery, one thing is certain. This couple has lived on throughout history just as famous as they were the day they died. Their legacy lives on through their facts, their fictions, and their mystery. What I think is so fascinating about the book I brought up in the beginning, My Life with Bonnie and Clyde by Blanche Caldwell Barra, is that it recounts actual moments that Blanche spent with Bonnie and Clyde and her husband Buck Barrow as they ran from the law. And something that's so fascinating to me is that Blanche was very much still alive when they did the 1967 film Bonnie and Clyde. So Warren Beatty actually approached her and asked her to discuss Clyde Barrow with him. And the two actually became very good friends and they spent a lot of time together as Warren Beatty pretty much used Blanche to help fill in his idea of who Clyde Barrow was as a person. And when the film came out in 1967, she saw it and was just disgusted by the way that Estelle Parsons played her in the movie, which is hilarious because Estelle Parsons actually won an Oscar for that role. And Blanche was so offended and she called, "I'm not a sniveling, whiny little bitch like that." So she was not happy with how she was portrayed. But you can read her entire story from first meeting Buck to accidentally getting looped into all of the crime of Bonnie and Clyde because she was a pastor's daughter. It was such a different world for her to get sucked into. How she went through that and inevitably how her and Buck were both caught. And, you know, Blanche survived and Buck unfortunately died when the police caught them. And she talks about her time in correctional facilities afterwards and what that was like for a woman in that time. And, you know, inevitably her life from there and how she was mostly blind, not fully, after she was caught because the glass from the mirror of the car actually went into her eyes. And, you know, her meeting Warren Beatty and how it all progressed from there. So I don't want to spoil it all, but it really is, if you're into history, and especially if you're interested in Bonnie and Clyde, I highly recommend reading My Life with Bonnie and Clyde by Blanche Caldwell Barra. Now, anyway, before we end today, I just want to talk a little bit more about what history did to the tale of Bonnie and Clyde. You know, it's a little bit different from these old legends we talked about where hundreds of years would, you know, happen before they would be immortalized in history. Bonnie and Clyde were different. Aside from immortalizing it, we also glamorized what was likely a miserable and painful life that the two chose to live together. When you look at the facts that I just presented, you know, they were poor. They were struggling to survive before they even started brushing with the law. That's kind of what put them in that situation. And then once they were forced into it, they were living in hiding, getting injured without the ability to get help or go to a hospital. They knew clearly that their escapes would not last forever, and it appeared they'd rather be caught dead than alive. Clearly, even Bonnie knew that this would end up becoming true, whether or not they were ready for it, by the poem that she wrote. I don't believe it was glamorous at all, but the magic of storytelling and the 1967 film alike have glamorized the two as this duo that's appealing and exciting for all time. And I think definitely talking about the Depression and how most people couldn't afford to live, just these two mostly attractive people who were willing to take life into their own hands and fight back. I mean, that was this wonderful thing that people idolize. And it kind of set Bonnie and Clyde forever as these legends in history, where we're glamorizing this criminal lifestyle that was probably actually pretty terrible. I mean, it's just a really interesting phenomena that I wanted to point out. And there's so many other wonderful historical figures that this applies to as well that I'd like to talk with you guys about in the future. Because we love to glamorize history because we love exciting tales. But that is all I have for you today. I really hope you enjoyed this little expose that I have for you guys on Bonnie and Clyde. I hope you enjoyed the interesting facts. I have many more to come with other historical figures, as I mentioned before, more modern and ancient alike, as well as topics to discuss on the occult, the metaphysical, weird history, adventure travel, and more, all coming to you. So stay tuned for the next episode. And until next time, make sure you stay weird.